Welcome to Commander Central. Today we are going to be doing a listener deck tech, and it's a tech for a commander I have never seen out in the wild as a commander or in a deck, and that's Kaho Manamo Historian. I am Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.
Have either of you two seen that commander anywhere in a deck or as a commander?
Nope.
I am looking forward to talking about it. But first, what's happening, gentlemen?
I think I have something in my eye right now. It's bothering me.
You're just emotional and you're tearing up at the thought of Kaho.
I pulled a Jason Alt tonight and downed a couple beers during our double recording session. So
you're feeling no pain?
I'm feeling great. IPAs are the best.
I got
watching you twitch and have to run upstairs.
Right. I had to pee so bad.
Yeah, you did. I will mention this, I will post a picture on the Twitter birds. I got a really good looking altar of Veil of the Nightclad out of nowhere. Gentleman in our store, Mark Richter. You can find him at Richter Alters. That's RichterAlters. Just like did a really cool full art borderless altar of Veil of the Nightclad and just said, hey, Merry Christmas, here you go. Thing looks fantastic. I will post a picture. And if you're looking to get any cards altered, he does really nice work.
Yes, he does.
So, any fun games this week from anybody?
Well, seeing that we are doing a double this week for recording. If you listened to 2 weeks ago,
you did not.
I was battling the NyQuil, so no, I did not play any recently.
Doubling season and gave with a
bad juju,
with a guy's cradle and a flipped growing rights is stupid.
So you're just like, okay, well, we're just done here.
No, I still lost the game, but I was like, okay, I'm going to kill you with commander damage if you don't kill Gabe.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Literally
right,
the only
yeah.
way I could win because he's at like 300 and some life. I'm like, so I do this and this and this and this, and then now I make all this millions of mana, and I start putting all these counters on, and I attack you, and he's like, yeah, we'll just swords them. I'm like, yeah, that's cute.
Well, I had a perfect Arvad game go off where I opened like T1, you know, I can't remember if it was Soul Ring or whatever it was. T2, I dropped Uncle Carl, Carl of the Ghost Council. Turn 3, I had Timna out. Turn 4, Odric 2.0 came out, so then all my guys had lifelink. And turn 5, the new Bruna came out, so then they all have flying and lifelink and whatever 6 abilities she has.
Are you thinking Bruna or Gisela?
Or sorry, Gisela.
I was going to say, Bruna is just like flying
Gisela.
And melds.
So then all my guys had flying, lifelink, first strike, whatever it was. So Carl, by turn 5, had like 40 counters on him or something. It was the dream play with that deck. And I think I managed to win with that deck by like turn 7, which will never, ever, 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 ever happen again. But it happened that one time, so I thought I would at least mention it. I saw a play, and it didn't win. He still lost the next game, but it was against an Aurelia deck, and Aurelia swung and killed 2 people and passed the turn to the Gyrus player. And this was really sweet because the Aurelia player had, in addition to Aurelia, I think a Baneslayer and who is the other angel that doubles your damage? Gisela played a Gold Knight.
Yep.
Had Gisela out and passes the turn to the Gyrus player who goes, huh. Plays Gyrus. He had anger in his graveyard to give it haste, swings with Gyrus, and brings back Whiptongue Hydra with Gyrus's trigger ability to destroy all flyers. And wiped the board and, you know, swung through and hit for like, you know, 10 damage or whatever it was. And then, of course, an exploit Aurelia player just played Aurelia again and still killed him. It didn't matter. But it, like, was a really cool, like, flashy play just to see in response where you think he's totally, totally dead. And he had the perfect combo in the graveyard. Anger and Whiptongue Hydra got it done.
So
that was pretty cool to see.
I hate that card. Whiptongue Hydra, not Gyrus.
My MVP card I saw this week, I saw do work in 2 different decks, was Blade of Selves. I got to win a game with my Vela deck because I put it on a duplicate at a fairly late point in the game when like everyone's hand were kind of depleted. I played a duplicate, put Blade of Selves on it, and was able to swing and then start making duplicate copies every turn to exile. So I like was able to clear the board out and then had enough additional value I was putting out between. I think I had a Mirage Mirror and then I played a Wyrmcoil Engine and I was copying it. And because of the Blade of Selves on that that duplicate, no one could keep a board state and I won it in like 2 turns from there. So that Man, Blade of Selves is a really good card if you've got enough ETB stuff in your deck. If you've got any MVP cards you've seen in your games, you can reach out to us on the Twitterbirds. Where would you find us, Chris?
Well, as you mentioned, the Twitterbirds, at CMDR Central. Facebook search us, CMDR Central. We've been getting a lot of Facebook lately.
We have, yeah.
We're getting a little more active there again.
Yep, keep it up. You can find us on the YouTubes, CMDR Central searching, where we have a lot of content.
We do.
Online at cmdrcentral.com. And again, I remembered, check the iTunes.
The iTunes.
The iTunes.
You can also find us at Flipside Gaming.
You can if you want to pick up any of the MVP cards we've mentioned in the past, or the cards we maybe mentioned a couple weeks ago on the cards UMA forgot.
Yes.
Head over to Flipside Gaming. Use promo code CMDR in all caps. You'll get 10% off your order, and we get a little pinch of that back, which helps keeps the lights on and apparently buys me pants because I guess I got to start wearing those.
Yes, indeed. You can also, if you want to support the show, find us on patreon.com.
By searching CMDR Central. Dang, we have this marketing thing down flat.
We've got it. We got to figure it out. We're professionals here.
There you can, $2 a month gets you into our chat. You can talk with Dana, myself.
Not Chris,
but the other 70 people in there, whether they're EDH rec writers, other players, or just other EDH lovers. We have great conversations between EDH, sports, MTG Finance. We got into a little bit the last couple weeks, which was bizarre, but we got there.
We got it done. We also have a contest we do every single month for Patreon supporters.
Yes, so our Patreon supporters get entered into an exclusive contest just for them. This month, the giveaway is for a Ultimate Masters box topper.
A sealed mystery UMA box topper.
Yes.
Hint, it's Stirring Wildwoods. No, we don't know what it is. It could be anything.
Yep, because literally, if you have seen any of the videos or posts or anything that says that you can see what the cards are inside of them or that there's labeled on there, it is not.
Okay, good. Well, good.
So that was donated by friend of the show and Patreon supporter Dan Mell. So, Dan, we thank you so much
for
giving that over to us to give away to all of our Patreon supporters. And unfortunately, you don't get to win your own box topper.
You do not. We also have a Twitter giveaway we do every month.
Yes. So the Twitter giveaway, if you retweet any of our tweets that use hashtag
Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
CMDR. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
There we go. Teamwork, everybody.
Oh, just hashtag it. Just Die Hard. Die Hard, Die Hard, Die Hard.
You'll be entered in to win some Dragon Shield inner sleeves, and they are the side loader ones. I did confirm these were from some prizes Dana won from a holiday party at our LGS.
Yep.
I remember that party.
Yeah. And you'll also get a random Vanguard card from Dana's Collections Adventures is in the prize pool pile.
All right. Another thing we'll quick mention, we've been having a conversation lately about upcoming Magic Fests in the year 2019. We're definitely going to hit any ones that are within close proximity to us, which is definitely Madison and Minneapolis. And we're going to be making an appearance probably for all of GP Vegas. Once again, that was a great time last year.
I remember all of it last year, so let's see if I can change that this year.
And if you want to hear actually a good show about playing Commander at a GP, we actually did one, our first show ever, but Brothers War Podcast just did a show
about a month ago.
With Patreon supporter Dan Krause, who is a good guy. And he was actually really good in the show. He did a really nice job talking about playing Magic at GPs because he goes to a ton of them.
For a guy that has not on a podcast, has never really done one, I literally messaged him privately in our Slack and I said, you sound like a frickin' natural.
He did, yeah. He did a really good job on there. So it was an entertaining show. It was very informative. One of the good points he made was, don't bring too many decks because I had too many decks last year.
Yep.
But he had a bunch of good tips for people for going to GPs or playing Commander. It's well worth listening to. And Ryan and those guys do a good job on that show anyway in general, so check out that. It was about a month ago. We can maybe throw a link on Twitter when this one airs.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to definitely go to a couple close ones. We're going to go to Vegas, but if anyone has any suggestions for one more, we're willing to probably try to fly to one more Magic Fest in 2019. So any suggestions from anybody, we will consider where we want to go in the U.S. We're not going to fly to Japan or any place like that. Yeah, I don't know if I can swing that. I'm not allowed to leave the U.S. legally. No, I can, but I just can't tell anybody. But... We'll try to go somewhere else. So if you have any suggestions for us where to go for a Magic Fest, We're also maybe going to try to see if there's any SCG cons we can go to as well.
Whether it's SCG Con, because they did their inaugural one, this year, before GP Vegas last summer. And then their winter one was just a couple weeks ago when you're hearing this episode. And, I mean, Dan went to the first SCG Con, and he said it was amazing. If you pay for their Commander package, you literally get treated like a Commander King. They have a whole separate room for you guys. You get a bunch of swag. He played against all the Versus guys, met all of them. You know, he said he walked away like 5 or 7 playmats just from that one event. So if their winter one gets good reviews, and if they do another one, I would contemplate going out to Roanoke for a weekend. I know there's some other EDH rec people like Dean Guti and Henry Stukenberg live out in that side of the country. So
Henry's in Austin, but yeah, Dean's definitely
I thought he was in
there.
Like the New York area.
Nope, he is down in Texas.
My bad.
But yeah, so we'll definitely go to Madison. We'll go to Minneapolis, and we're going to go to one other one aside from Vegas. That's a haul away. So we will figure something out, but any suggestions, we will be glad to hear them. So now let's do a deck tech on Jerry's Kaho Manamo Historian deck. We will put a link out there on the Twitter birds and in our show notes so you can check it out. But we got some notes from Jerry. Max, you want to read those to us to tell us what he has to say about his deck?
Okay, so Kaho, pretty much, you know, like we do with all of our Patreon supporters at the $15 or $30 level with the full deck tech, we ask them some questions like, where does the deck need improvement? What's your meta like? You know, basic questions. So we kind of get an understanding of where we should direct our deck tech, because some people play in different metas than us. So, you know, we don't want to push them into a super aggressive deck style where that's not how they play. So he started off with saying shortfalls is winning and staying alive, not dying, not having a target on my back, because this deck literally has a ton of counter spells in it.
Right.
The meta is, his play group is normally about 75% decks, but occasionally the oops, I win combos do happen, but they aren't very frequent unless they're by him. The power level of his meta, though, is fairly flat, and then every now and then when he does make an appearance to play Commander at our LGS on a Tuesday night, all bets are off because he doesn't know the meta.
Sure.
He did make some notes on some card choices, such as, like, Arcane Denial and Thousand Year Elixir are just not in the deck, even though they're good, because they only synergize with the Commander themselves and not anything else in the deck. So as a deck builder, he realized that why play a card if it's only interacting with one other card in my deck, which is super good on his end. You know, that's what we kind of point people towards is, you know, why are you running this if it's not doing a lot for everything in your deck?
Right.
He did say, like, other cards such as Swarm Intelligence are Disciple of the Ring. They're cool, but they're expensive, and they really don't cover up the deck's weaknesses. So he kind of tries them here and there, but maybe they are worth another shot in the future. But when it boils down to it, is the deck just needs win conditions. Currently, it's mainly just army in a can type of threats that are solid, but don't survive long enough to win or stabilize the game. And he does run Nexus of Fate, but is a slow and grindy win, which annoys everybody else in the pod. He did also say that any suggestions we do make shouldn't be more than $100 total when suggesting cards.
That seems all very reasonable. So to start with, Chris, you want to read Kaho to us? We know what we're talking about here?
Yes, Kaho is 4 mana, 2 colorless, 2 blue, legendary creature, human wizard. Wizard could be a thing.
Yes.
When Kaho, Manamo Historian, comes into play, search your library for up to 3 instant cards and remove them from the game, then shuffle your library. Pay X and tap it. Now, I'm assuming X, since it's saying colorless, it could be anything if you were playing a multicolor deck. But obviously, as a general, this is just blue.
Yep.
You may play a card with converted mana cost X removed from the game with Kaho's ability without paying its mana cost. And Kaho is a 2/2.
Oh.
One note we will mention here, because we all looked it up, I think, separately. If Kaho leaves the game, those cards exiled aren't castable on the next instance of Kaho coming into play. So it's not like a Gonti ability where whether Gonti is is coming. Whether Gonti's, it's the four cards, or the card he just got this turn. You can play any of the cards you got with Gonti previously when he comes into play. That is not the case here with Kaho.
Correct. I would like to chime in here, though. The Oracle text does actually say X tap. You may cast the cards. It's not play anymore.
Okay. It's
so
cast.
You do get cast triggers, stuff like that.
Okay.
So it is respondable, essentially.
All right. A couple brief overview things here. The average CMC of the deck is 3.61, which is a little on the high side.
I don't mind it,
but
for
it's
mono
not terrible.
Blue. I mean, I've seen worse. I've
yes.
seen better, but I think this is a solid. That 3.3 to 3.7 is okay in my book.
And I think the curve is a little heavy, maybe on 5 to 6 drops. But we'll dig a little bit deeper into that right now. So first of all, what's your first impulse to, when you look at this deck and see Kaho, having never seen it before, what would your instinctive build be if you were given this card and told to build a deck?
Paradox Engine combo?
Well, I think that
that's where I go.
I think we're all going to kind of come to the same conclusion, but I want to hear what Chris says. Well, I think your silence, Chris, and you're shaking your head and looking like you're unsure is kind of the same problem we all had. It's a cool card, and I'm not entirely sure what I would do with it, which
yeah,
I think is also what Jerry's problem.
It's quite
problem
limited
has been
because
here.
It's blue. Now, if it were like blue-white or blue-black or
sure.
something, it would be, you could go for so many more things.
Yep.
This is a card I look at and instantly think, this is a hidden commander in like a Kess deck or
Nala something.
Deck.
Yeah.
Like, I want to play a Nala and find my Kaho and just go.
Yes. So, I will open with my non-serious suggestion for this deck, but I'm kind of serious because I do think Jerry should build this and just keep it on the side and occasionally rotate it in just to mess with his friends. And that is a deck that consists of Mystical Tutor, Mana Severance, and Laboratory Maniac, plus a 1-mana draw spell like Opt or Brainstorm would work, and 95 islands with the same commander. And so here's what you do. When you cast Kaho, you put Mystical Tutor and Mana Severance and your draw spell underneath her. Is it her or him? I guess I didn't even pay that close of attention. Or a they, I guess we don't know.
They, we'll go with they.
We'll go with they, all right. So you put your spells underneath Kaho. You use your Mystical Tutor to go get Mana Severance. And Max, I think you just looked up Mana Severance. You want to read what that card does?
I did, because I have no idea. It is, Mana Severance is a 1-in-a-blue sorcery from Tempest, which reads, search your library for any number of land cards and remove them from the game. Shuffle your library afterwards.
Doomsday!
So you use Mystical Tutor to get Mana Severance.
Okay.
Cast it, at which point then you pull every single one of those 95 islands out of your deck, leaving you with a Doomsday pile that consists of Laboratory Maniac. You draw Laboratory Maniac on your next turn, play Lab Man, and then cast the 1-mana draw spell off Kaho, whether it's Opt or Brainstorm, and win the game. Now that wouldn't be a very interesting deck if that was this deck, but you can build that deck. You can build those parts and have them sitting there on the side for like $4. And occasionally, to mess with your friends, you can, I guess Lab Man's like $7 or $8, so it'll probably cost you 10 or 12. But
I do believe it just got reprinted.
It did, that's true, so it'll drop. Actually, at an uncommon, I think, even, I believe, in Ultimate Masters, we're going to look that up and verify it.
Yep, it did get printed as an uncommon
so
in
that
will,
so that
Ultimate
will drop.
Masters.
So again, we're talking, this will be a cheap alternative to this deck, and when you're playing with your friends who know it, you can just kind of slide your Kaho on top of that and play this deck and win with your Doomsday pile.
So what happens if it gets like?
Oh, you'll lose. You're absolutely you'll lose the game then. You're dead then. But the first time, no one will see it coming, and then you lull them in this false sense of confidence in future games when they're like, oh, he's back to the old deck, and then 3 weeks later, just
boom,
grab Kaho again and put it back in the pile and go back to the deck. To mess with your friends, that's worth having that $10 second variant on Kaho sitting there on the side. So that's my first not entirely serious suggestion, but it's kind of serious because I would absolutely have that as my alternative way to mess with my friends, for sure.
That's how you would build this deck from the first place and then move to what Jerry has.
Maybe, right. Like, just once just to do it and then like, okay, I had my fun. So let's look at his land base first.
Okay.
Which is pretty simple because there's a bunch of islands there.
Yeah, so we have 34 lands total for a mono-colored deck. That seems pretty good. We have 26 islands, and the utility lands, I'll call them, are Ash Barrens, Buseju, who shelters all, Field of Ruin, Ghost Quarter, Minamu, School of Water's Edge, Reliquary Tower, Riptide Laboratory, and Temple of the False God.
I asked Jerry about Ash Barrens.
Oh, good, because that was on my notes as well.
And he said once upon a time he had Jason Mind Sculptor in this deck, and I believe there's still a Brainstorm in there. So it was a way to have a shuffle effect when he Brainstormed or had Jace out. He said in hindsight, it didn't come up that much anyway, and now that Jace is no longer in the deck, he'll probably just turn that into either an island or something else. So Ash Barrens is probably already going to be on its way out. So we have two land destruction lands, Field of Ruin and Ghost Quarter, both of which are good cards. You could maybe run a third, but I don't know if it's necessary, particularly since Strip Mine is, you know, $25 and Wasteland is roughly the same price. You throw Tech Edge in there maybe instead of that Ash Barrens, but depending on your meta, you might just not need more than those two as well. Minamo, that's a really good card in this particular deck. Minamo is a legendary land that you can tap for a blue. So basically, it comes into play and it's just an island. There's no downside to it.
Right.
And you can spend a blue to untap target legendary permanent. Yeah, because your commander's got a tap activated ability, so it lets you cast a second spell that turn. This is a perfect deck for it. Riptide Lab, I was a little bit unsure about. I guess it's a way to get Minamo back to then recast and reload spells. I guess that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it is a 4-mana commander, so, I mean, the tax does go up a little quicker. I mean, I think it's more of a late-game strategy, like, hey...
Late, sure.
Kaho's going to cost me 10 next turn if it dies, so I'll bounce it.
How about the last card, the last land on this list? Temple of False God. What do you guys think? Yay or nay? Chris is sighing.
I'm fine with it because it is a monocolor deck.
But it does only have 34 lands.
Here's my view on it. Like, I'm a fan of Temple of the False God in most of my decks. A lot of these spells have at least two colorless pips in them, and it's saving him from tapping those islands. That's really what it comes down to. And Jerry isn't running the mana crypts and the mana vaults and the grim monoliths like you sometimes see in mono blue decks.
It's also not a fast deck, so he's planning on being around until turn 12 or 14, I believe.
Right.
There's also a decent bit of draw in here, or at least kind of filtering, whether it's Brainstorm kind of effects, Ponder, Preordain, whatever. So it's going to be a little bit easier to make sure he consistently hits his land draws as well. I would say if Ancient Tomb drops down to a reasonable price, I just checked today. So as of recording this, which is
the day before Ultimate Masters
before UMA comes out, it's the pre-order is sitting at 21, I think, for Ancient Tomb. I don't know if it's going to drop too much more than that, and it may well go up, and it will go up long term. So that's still not super cheap, but it's cheaper than the $50 it was. The counter to Ancient Tomb would be Boseju's already hitting you for 3 life whenever you use its ability, or 2 life, excuse me. And there's no life gain in this deck, so maybe since it's a kind of a long slog kind of deck, maybe you don't want a second 2 damage spell. I don't know. 2 damage land, excuse me. But I agree, if you don't want to run Ancient Tomb, I think Temple's probably fine in this deck.
Yeah.
I like Memorial to Genius.
Dominaria.
Yeah, Dominaria 1. I forget which one does.
So it comes into play tapped, creates a blue mana, but then for 5 mana you can sack it and draw 2 cards.
There's not a lot of downside to it here. Nope. And I will also note this, a lot of times in mono decks, at least I tend to run mana doublers. I have Gauntlet, I tend to have Caged Sun, I tend to have Extra Planar Lens, whatever. So I want to keep my basic count relatively high. He's not doing that here. So it's much easier to put something like Memorial to Genius in this deck and not have it hurt you because you're like, it's a blue mana source. I don't care if it's a basic land or not. So yeah. I agree there's probably a little bit more room for those kind of cards here than I would have in my deck. I do have a mono blue tower on deck, and I try to keep the basic count pretty high in it.
My other includes would be maybe like Inventor's Fair. He is running 10 artifacts on top of Sad Robot and a couple other things where... that might get you that mana rock you need, that Gilded Lotus. Or if you do switch up the artifact package to add more fast mana, you're just going to trigger Inventor's Fair faster to be able to tutor something else.
Or get you Lightning Greaves, or get you Swift of Boots to keep your commander protected or get you another card I will mention here when we move to artifacts that we're not at just yet. So I'll make a note to reference Inventor's Fair when we get to that point. So lands, I think we've covered anything we would do there. Let's take a look at enchantments because there's only a few of them. You want to go over those here, Chris?
Sure. We have As Foretold, Imprisoned in the Moon, Metallurgic Summonings, Rhystic Study, and Search for Azcanta. And if you guys caught my little pronunciation, that was a dig at Max from the last episode from pronouncing, what was it, something gnar wrong?
Exactly. I've been drinking.
So we have five enchantments here. I like As Foretold a lot. Just generally, it almost always generates pretty good value. Imprisoning the Moon, you know, is a good removal spell, and blue is always hurting a little bit for ways to remove stuff. And it locks things down, too, which is really nice. Summonings, you're just going to get value for casting spells, which you're already going to cast. Rhystic Study is obviously good. And Search is obviously always a good card. So that's five enchantments. Is there anything you guys would add or remove out of that list?
It was so hard for me to really see if I could find anything. Maybe Propaganda. Add a Propaganda
in there.
Protect
yourself?
Yep.
I have one big one.
I have two.
What are your two, Max?
I'm going to go with number two first, and we'll work our way up to the all first right. place. Number two is going to be Sphinx's Tutelage. With the amount of instants and sorceries Jerry currently has in this deck,
yep,
a mill package might actually work in multiplayer Commander.
Okay.
Either maybe it just eliminates that aggro player that you know is going to kill you on turn 7 or 8. You know, eliminate the heavy threat in the game and then work on the other opponents. Just because, I mean, we'll get to this, but he's running 32 instants and...
Three sorceries.
So, yeah, 35 instants or sorceries. So then my number one is Training Grounds.
That was my addition as well.
Because Keho's ability is X. So that means when you cast it right away for 4 mana, and if Training Grounds is out, that changes what you go searching for right away on turn 4.
So for those who don't remember, Training Grounds is a 1-mana enchantment from Zendikar Black. Activated abilities of all creatures you control cost up to 2 less to activate. This effect can't reduce the amount of mana an ability cost to activate to less than 1. So, you know, a 3-mana spell becomes 1, a 2 becomes 1. It doesn't affect a 1-mana spell, but everything above that is 2 less. And there's a lot of spells in the, like I said, that 5 or 6-mana range that then become 3-mana spells or 4-mana spells. And since his deck is so commander-focused, you're going to save so much mana with this spell. And it's so efficient at 1. At any point in the game that you draw it, it's really easy to drop and immediately start generating value, too. Now, it's a $12 card, so it's going to use up, you know, 12% of its $100 budget for improvements. But that's the main one I would for sure find a slot for. Any other enchantment things worth hitting on, I think? And I think that's a good amount. I think this being kind of a spell slinger E deck, I think you don't want to get too many spells that aren't incense or sorceries, and I think 5 is a good amount of enchantments.
Yeah. I guess another honorable mention is there's an enchantment out of the Shadows over Innistrad block where whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you investigate. So yeah. This deck is whacking on card draw a bit, so that would be another way to...
It's got a lot of the low-end draw that, you know, the stuff that either filters or gets you like 1 or 2 cards, right, but it doesn't have a lot of stuff that refills your hand.
So that would be maybe a long-term plan of, cool, I'm going to cast this op and make a clue. I'm going to cast this Preordain and make a clue. And then over time, okay, cool, I don't have anything to do on your end step. I'll crack 1 or 2 clues and go. But like I said, that's more of an honorable mention. I don't think it really gets a spot in this deck because I don't think it's what this deck wants to do.
Okay.
It could be. If you add a few more Planeswalkers in there.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So the one Planeswalker we have is Ugin the Spirit Dragon, which is just an all-star.
In general.
If you have one, he just works in general.
Yep.
Now, what if we added some Tezzerets in here?
Okay.
If we have to.
Both of them?
There's 3 of them
there's
we could add.
There's two that are good ones?
Yeah, there are 2 that are good.
The original 2 are good, and the newest one is pretty decent, too, although it's 5 mana. If you have an artifact out, he just draws 2 for 0. That's pretty solid.
Yep. The other one's turn, you can... One searches up artifacts. The other one...
Because there's
can turn an artifact you control into a 5/5 creature for 6 mana. So it's just another looking for win con. So if you went into, say, like that enchantment where you start creating all these clues that are artifacts,
right?
You can just turn them into beaters.
5/5 beaters.
Yep. Yeah.
And then, oh, I'm going to block. Cool. I'll just pay two and draw a card instead.
Yep. Yeah. Well, speaking of artifacts, there's 10 artifacts in this deck. Coercive Portal, Gilded Lotus, Lightning Greaves, Mind Stone, Oblivion Stone, Sapphire Medallion, Soul Ring, Swiftfoot Boots, Thought Vessel, and Unstable Obelisk. So let's start at the top. Coercive Portal, I asked him about specifically. He said it's usually about 75% of the time it winds up just being a draw spell.
Yep.
For those who don't recall, it's an artifact for 4 mana and has Will of the Council. At the beginning of your upkeep, starting with you, each player votes for Carnage or Homage. If Carnage gets more votes, you sack Coercive Portal and destroy all non-land permanents. And if Homage gets more votes or is the vote is tied, you draw a card. So it's basically a 4 mana draw a card, he said, most of the time.
Why couldn't it say, like, destroy all permanents?
Yeah.
Because then it would always be, oh, I just get to draw another card
right,
every turn.
Sure.
Till someone
right.
removes it.
So what are your thoughts? So I don't love this card in this deck. And I understand it's probably mostly just a Phyrexian Arena or a Honden of the Seeing Wind, I think, is a 5 mana enchantment that draws you a card every turn in blue. But I think the risk, at least the thing I would be afraid of, maybe it never happens, is when you drop it on turn 5 or something and you're like, cool, I'm going to draw a card, and everyone's giving you cards because they don't want the board state to blow up. But suddenly it's turn 9 and you've played 3 things between now and then and changed the board state, and suddenly you're ahead and this is still in play. And you have to then now worry, okay, is everyone going to blow up my board state now because I've pulled ahead and you're in colors that aren't great at dealing with artifacts.
I look at this card in the exact opposite of what you just described.
Okay.
If I'm going to play this early, I'm playing that because I hope my opponents pick the Wrath.
And you're just going to maybe sandbag and draw cards until they do.
Right.
I've never seen the card played, so it might well work out. It might well play out that way, and I don't know it. So that's a good point.
I know a few people in Jerry's play group, and I know another one of them plays a mono white deck, and he plays this as well in his mono white deck.
Okay. Interesting.
But I mean, if you play this early and your opponents let you draw cards, I mean, that's just money.
Sure.
But I think the strategic play is, okay, it's turn 5. Jerry just dropped this. I only have a couple things on the board they're not really doing much for me, but yeah, I mean, a soul ring and maybe a low drop creature. Can I recover if these get destroyed? Yeah, of course I can. Let's blow everything up so I don't have to let him draw a card every turn.
Okay. I would believe it works that way. I was just thinking maybe in terms of worst case scenario, but that would make sense. I'll have to maybe ask him a little bit more how well it works. I just asked him what it does. I didn't ask for like any particular feedback on how effective it is. So I would believe that. The next artifact I didn't love was Gilded Lotus. Yeah, it's 5 mana and you get 3 back right away. But part of the value of Gilded Lotus is you're making colored mana that probably, you know, hey, I've got a bunch of blue and I need to make white, or I've got a bunch of green and red and I need to make black, what have you. But 5 mana is a lot, and in this deck that's mono blue that has a commander with an activated colorless ability, if I wanted a rock that made 3 mana, I'd probably just run Thran Dynamo, save a mana and have it make me my 3 colorless, because I would bet in this deck 95% of the time you don't care that is blue mana you're making. But even then, I think I would probably still prefer just a 2-mana rock over 2-mana rock that makes 1 over a 5-mana rock that makes 3.
I think he has all the good 2-mana ones aside from Fracture Power Stone. I'd probably run Commander Sphere over it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
At least draws you a card. I just quickly looked through the list. He only has 2 cards in the entire deck that has triple blue in the casting cost.
Right.
So, I mean, like you were saying, Dana, that triple blue from Gilded Lotus isn't really doing much when you're not in a 2-color deck. I mean, yeah, it's 3 extra mana, and if it sticks around next turn there, you've made it all back for what you spent on it. But I think I agree with you and Chris, Thran Dynamo, Commander Sphere, and if you want to kind of break the bank a little, go for the faster mana, Crypt Vault, Grim Monolith.
Coalition Relic, even at 3 mana, because that's going to get you 2 every other turn if you need to. I do like Unstable Obelisk in this deck. yeah, it's, you know, it's a 3-mana to make a colorless, but again, you can afford the colorless. And 7 to sack it and destroy a permanent. In blue, it doesn't have a lot of ways to destroy something. Sometimes you just, you couldn't counterspell that doubling season or that whatever, and you sometimes just need an emergency way to do it, and that will get you there. So I'm a fan of that card. Any other artifacts were of note or any additions you guys want to make?
I'm going to get on this artifact train with these Tezzerets.
All right.
Tamio's Journal.
It's going to make you artifacts. That's yep. For what you're doing. And
it allows you to tutor any card out of your deck.
Sure.
When yeah. you have 3 clues.
How about you, Max?
I mean, I said it in the beginning of the show, and you asked what would you think of when you look at this deck without knowing anything about it. Paradox Engine.
I mean, I love Paradox Engine, but like it works with your commander. It's going to untap.
It definitely does, but it also involves restructuring your entire artifact base.
To have way more mana rocks.
Which I don't know if Jerry wants to do. So, I mean,
and you're playing Paradox Engine, which is going to annoy people in general.
But when you're running this many counterspells, you have the protection. I mean, and the only reason I really say that is I've played it in 1v1. I mean, it is, if it gets going in 1v1, the game's over. I mean, there's a reason why it's Paradox combo.
The one artifact I would suggest adding that isn't on here is Isochron Scepter. There's already a ton of instances of spells that you can put underneath an Isochron Scepter in the stack, because you're going to be putting them under your commander. So why not have like a backup commander plan essentially? And it's something that you could fetch with the Inventor's Fair that you suggested earlier.
Exactly.
So I would probably consider Isochron. Although to be honest, I've since pulled it from my Talran deck, which is a heavy spell deck, just because it just wasn't that fun of a card, but it would be an effective card, I think, in this deck. So, any other ones?
I think we covered all the big ones. I mean, Gilded Lotus is a hit or miss, I think, in all of our books, but overall, it's a good artifact package.
The one other thing I keep coming back to, his big thing is he has issue winning.
Yes.
What do you guys think about putting a small sword package in here? Whether it be like Jit and the black-green sword or something like that, or the red-blue sword, which lets you draw and bolt, that kind of thing, just for protection purposes.
I think it's a little bit going to be a little bit tricky to poke through, but maybe the one win con card I was going to maybe suggest here, because I've ran it in my Talran deck to pretty good effect, is Sentinel Tower, which was in Battle Bond. And whenever an instant or sorcery spell is cast during your turn, Sentinel Tower deals damage to target creature or player or planeswalker equal to 1 plus the number of those spells cast before it this turn. So, okay, you cast one spell, you're dealing 2 damage, you're shocking somebody. But once you go to 2 spells, then you're up to 5 damage. You go to 3, then you're up to 9. Like, there's going to be plenty of times between your commander and other things you're going to be able to chain off 3 or 4 or 5 spells, and you're just going to be able to kill somebody if this sets out in play for too long, and you don't have to do anything with it. It just sits there and does that thing
And
while you're doing your stuff.
Worst comes to worst, you just shock every turn that you counterspell something?
Yeah.
No, it's...
Did I do the math wrong on
it? Yeah,
there?
So it's the first instant or sorcery cast on the turn is 1, then 2, then 3. It only increments by 1.
One plus the number of spells
cast before it. So it would be 2...
It's just like the one where you gain 1 life plus every...
Right. I'm reading the rules text. It says, for example, the first instant or sorcery spell cast during your turn causes Sentinel Tower to deal 1 damage. The second causes it to deal 2, and so on. Whenever an instant or sorcery spell is cast during your turn, it deals damage to any target to...
Right, I'm sorry.
Equal to 1 plus the number of instant or sorcery spells cast before that. So you're not counting... The one you're actually
sorry,
casting.
Sorry, yes, I wasn't saying it was going to deal. I said that wrong. It's not going to deal 1, then that it's going to deal 1, and then it's going to deal 2, and then it's going to deal 3. But so accumulatively, it's going to...
Over time, in this deck, it will do a lot of damage. Yes.
There's also Sphinx's Bone Wand, which kind of does a similar thing where you put counters on it and it deals damage. But although that's, I believe, 7 mana to cast.
Yeah, and it's extremely slow, to be quite honest.
But it gives you an option where if you're like looking for ways to kill people, it's another one if you don't just want to run combo.
Yep.
Anything before we move on in artifacts? The swords is interesting. I just think you'd struggle
it was
to get through.
Because I was trying to think of ways not to really change the deck too much for what he's doing, but some way to be able to punch damage through and gain exponential advantage over your opponents.
So we'll save instance for last because that's where
the bulk of it is.
Where the bulk of the deck is. How about sorceries? Merchant Scroll, Ponder, and Preordain.
Three great sorceries for this deck.
Yeah, those are all really, really good. Merchant Scroll especially because you can search your library for a blue instant for two mana. That is pretty solid. And it goes to your hand. That's going to go to the top of your library as well.
Yep.
Ponder and Preordain are really, really good cards too. I run both of them in my Talran deck. And I don't think you need, like, there are slightly worse versions at instant speed you could be running, but I don't think you need to. I think just being able to filter down is useful on both those cards, so I don't think I would take any of them out. Is there anything you would add? The only thing I was thinking
is
like,
Recurring Insight sorcery?
It is sorcery speed. It's a nice hand refiller, though.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a heavy mana cost.
Six
though.
Mana is a lot.
But then again, as we said, is, you know, he's got some big mana costing cards. So.
Yeah.
I think Curse of the Swine might get a spot in this deck just as another removal. Exile some problem creatures and give them some boars.
Yeah. I very rarely regret drawing Curse of Swine in the decks where I run it.
He should play Treasure Cruise.
Treasure
Cruise. Oh, like, I was waiting for it. I thought that you would say something about that.
Well, you know, actually, what that brings up the point, though I didn't mention it, but we skipped past a card we always mentioned, Scavenger Grounds.
It was on my list. I just assumed was on you were going to talk about
it. I just skipped past it. I got chastised last night again at the shop. Quit telling everyone to run Scavenger Grounds. But yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of graveyard recursion here. There's a little bit, but you could probably pretty easily exile a bunch of stuff with Treasure Cruise and draw three cards.
Yep.
Creatures. What do you guys think of the creature package here?
So how
14
many?
14 creatures,
okay.
Total.
So I'm going to go back to when we talked about Riptide Lab. You guys were kind of like, meh. There is six wizards in this deck.
You know,
seven if you include the commander.
I wasn't thinking of that, and a lot of them have ETB abilities,
yep.
Whether it's Jace, Friend's Prodigy, Snapcaster Mage. So yeah, there's actually some good value there.
Spellseeker, bounce it, play it again, search for another instant sorcery, two or less.
Yep. Yeah, no, I wasn't hadn't been thinking of that, but that makes a lot of sense. I was just thinking in terms of the commander, but yeah, there's a lot of good value for Riptide Lab in this deck, especially.
Okay, I do have some creatures that I would put in here.
Okay.
So first thing I'm going to suggest, and I'm a horrible human being for doing this, but is if you're looking for a good win con and this deck already annoys your friends to begin with, why not just play the Pickles Lock?
Oh, true.
And it's not an easy thing. Number one, you can't tutor up those creatures
yep.
easily. You just have to stumble across it. So I don't think anyone's going to complain about that for the most part. It's mana intensive.
Yep, but it's Brian Elemental's a 5/6, I do believe. So it's got a body on it to
and
beat.
And what
with.
Does it cost to cast? Is it 6 mana or 7 mana?
Brine Elemental is 4 colorless and 2 blue for
six.
A
6 mana. Yeah.
Elemental 5/4 and it you can morph it. Then you unmorph it for 5 and 2 blue, and then when it is turned face up, each opponent skips his or her next untap step. So what's the other part of that combo, Chris?
I don't remember. Vesuvian Shapeshifter or something
yeah.
like that. Something that flips it face down again. Or it makes a copy of it. And then Vesuvian's Shapeshifter can be flip face down, one of the two.
Vesuvian Shapeshifter is 3 and 2 blue. You can morph it. And then as Vesuvian Shapeshifter enters the battlefield or is turned face up, you may choose another creature on the battlefield. If you do until Vesuvian Shapeshifter is turned face down, it becomes a copy of that creature and gains at the beginning of your upkeep. You may turn this creature face down. So you cast Vesuvian Shapeshifter for 5, and then you can pay 1 in a blue to morph it.
Yep, and then you just keep flipping it back up and lock your opponents out of ever untapping again.
Yeah, I mean, no one loves to have that happen to them, but like this, it's not an easy thing to accomplish in this deck.
And it almost seems like the style of deck that he's built, with the amount of instants that we're going to talk about, they wouldn't be surprised to see it come out of this deck.
No, right. And like I said, if I was playing against this deck and it happened, I'd be like, well, I let it happen. You got all the mana out, you drew those spells, that's my
right.
fault.
Yep.
Let's shuffle up and play a new one.
Another weird lock that I was contemplating, and it's another really mana-intensive one, but it's really cheap monetary value, is Whelming Wave and Monomic Wall with the Stormtide Leviathan.
First of all, Stormtide Leviathan's in this deck is going to give you a little protection as well.
Yep. But Whelming Wave returns all creatures that aren't like krakens, octopuses, snakes, that kind of thing. And Monomic Wall comes into play and you return an instant sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. So you just keep bouncing everything. Bounce Monomic Wall back to your hand, get it back again, keep going that route with it. And then Stormtide Leviathan is a Leviathan that doesn't get bounced. And he just keep coming in and beats.
And he turns all lands into islands and he has island walk.
Stormtide Leviathan is one that all lands are islands in addition to other type, and all creatures with flying or island walk can't attack.
Yeah. But Whelming Wave and Monomic Wall just lock it out because Whelming Wave does not bounce Stormtide Leviathan.
And you just swing.
You just swing Stormtide
and nobody else.
That's right.
And you just keep them locked out.
You're the only one who can
forever.
Do anything. Yep. Okay. Got it. And again, that's
super expensive to play.
And
but...
you can't tutor those pieces up.
Yep.
And so you had just have to come across it. I mean, I guess you could run a limited amount of creatures and do some kind of a polymorph package, but that would require huge changes to deck. You're just, if you come across it, that's a way to get a lock, and you've earned it at that point, I think.
Oh, for sure.
And I know I'm going to get harassed for these cards because they're absolute trash cards, in my opinion. But to set it up this way, if you can get it off,
but
it
like
would
you,
be awesome.
You already
see.
Have Jinjitaxus in this deck, so you're already going to be annoying people. Like, that's already an expensive card that no one loves to see.
I forgot that was in here.
I might as well read the list here briefly of creatures. You have Baral, Consecrated Sphinx, Docent of Perfection, Illusory Ambusher, which is a cool card that I very rarely see that is a nice little draw engine. Jace Vryn's Prodigy, Jinjitaxus, Lunar Mystic, that whenever you cast an instant sorcery spell, you can pay one and draw a card. Metamorph, which is already in here. But it's easy to get the Pickles lock because you already have half of it.
Yep.
That's Phyrexian Metamorph.
Yes, Phyrexian Metamorph.
Well, it's even easier because then you can just copy things with
right.
it, too.
Solemn Simulacrum, Spellseeker, Talrand, Teferi, Mage of Zalfir, and Torrential Gearhulk. So quite a few creatures that bring things back from your graveyard to play as well.
Yep. I have more creatures that I contemplated whether they should come in here or not. And these are just suggestions to think on. You got Thing in the Ice.
That was on my list as well.
Yeah.
Which you got so many spells, you know, you remove the counters, bounce everything, and then you got a 7/6 flyer or something like that.
Correct.
When it flips. Storm Surge Kraken, which partners with your general... he has Hexproof. He becomes like a 7/7, and whenever he deals damage, you get to draw cards. Sphinx of the Final Word can't be countered, Hexproof, all that fun
Your
jazz.
Instants and sorceries can't be
yep.
countered.
Yep. Now, I was also thinking about creatures that whenever they deal damage, you draw cards. So you're a little like
a Mall Drifter.
Lujun or something like that.
Yep.
The horsemanship guy.
Yep. Thieving Magpie, they may deal minimal damage, but you're just gaining advantage off
sure.
them if they don't. Someone doesn't kill them. And then the final one is actually a new card called Murmuring Mystic.
Yeah.
Which is literally another Talrand card, yep. but harder to kill because it's a 1/5.
I have it in my Talrand deck now.
Yep.
On top of what Chris just mentioned, you know, he kind of said a lot of creatures that let you draw cards when they do something. Well, I went with the creature package that benefit from you drawing cards. So we have... Chasm Skulker. Draw a card, put a counter on it. When it dies, make that many squids. Great. And then Toothy, Imaginary Friend. Whenever you draw a card, put a +1/+1 counter on it.
Whenever it dies.
When he
leaves
the battlefield
true, yeah.
draw that many cards equal to the +1/+1 counters on him.
Oh, I'm in a Whelming Wave.
I've got something.
Exactly.
I have a couple cards I will suggest and move to the instant that will actually work very nicely with Toothy as well.
And I also had Thing in the Ice. That was actually my first one because I'm like, oh, look, all these instants, Thing in the Ice bounces everything, and it's a 7/8. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, Thing in the Ice and Murmuring Mystic were the first two things that popped in my mind. I'm like,
There's also Archaeomancer you could run that gives you like one more kind of Jace Finn's Prodigy kind of effect where you can bring back another spell. So, And
I think it's a wizard too, so you can probably
Riptide Lab, yep. All right. Should we take the deep dive here into the instants?
Deep dive.
There is 172 instants in this deck.
This is not a
and
commander
they all
deck.
Say, no, right. You can't do that.
There's 32 instants. There's actually a good amount of counters, but there's not. I've seen way, way worse.
The thing I got to say about them is they're all good counter spells for what they are.
Yeah.
Now, if I would have seen a cancel in here, I might have had to call Jerry out on that one. Just to see if he edited this just to troll us.
So, Max, you want to go over the instant list here briefly?
Okay, so we have Aether Snatch, which gain control of target target spell, choose new targets for it. Aether Spouts, for each attacking creature, put it on the top or bottom of that player's library.
Nice defensive spell.
Brainstorm, Crackling Counterpart, put a token that's a copy of target creature you control, and it has flashback. Commit, put target spell or non-land permanent into its owner library, two down, and then it also has... Memory, which is a split card from Amonkhet, and it has Aftermath. Each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into their library, and you draw seven.
Yep.
It's untapped out, it's sideways, so I'm sitting here with my head like 85 degrees to the right.
I just have this card memorized from Standard.
We have Confirmed Suspicions, 5 mana, counter target spell, investigate 3 times.
Oh, that'll go with my...
Right? OG Counterspell. That super old counter spell that's not Mystic Confluence, Cryptic Command.
What does it do again, Dana?
Which one?
Cryptic Command. I don't,
it does. It can, it can bounce, it can draw, it can bounce, and then it can draw again, right?
No. Close enough. Right. So you choose to counter target spell, return permanent to its hand, tap all creatures your opponents control, or draw a card. Cyclonic Rift, don't have to say anything about that. Desertion, 5 mana counter spell. If it's a creature or an artifact, you get it. Dig Through Time, look at the top 7, keep 2, and put the rest on bottom. What are you laughing at now? Did I get that wrong?
No, I'm just seeing how long it takes before you get winded.
I'm there. I was there on the second card. I cannot do this. Disdainful Stroke, counter target spell with CMC 4 or greater. Dismiss, counter target spell, draw a card. Engulf the Shores, return to their owner's hands all creatures with toughness less than or equal to the number of islands you control. Factor Fiction, Force Will, Insidious Will, it's a modular counterspell that lets you do some other stuff. Mystic Confluence, the newer Cryptic Command.
This one you can bounce, draw, or whatever.
You choose 3, and then you can pick the same mode more than once if you like. Counter targets, it's a mana leak, right?
Yep.
Mana leak, bounce, draw. Mystical Tutor, negate, next to the fate, extra turn, puts it in your library. OG Opt in foil. So we're just going to call that out.
I might have to hit him up and see if he wants a full art foil.
Overwhelming Intellect, which is counter target spell, draw cards equal to that CMC.
Counter target creature spell, but still.
Correct. That's why I don't run it in my decks. Pongify, pull from tomorrow, X double blue, draw X, discard a card. Rapid Hybridization, another destroy target creature, and they get a 3-3 something. Reality Shift, exile target creature, and then that person manifests the top card of their library. Spell Swindle, the modern day mana drain, 5 mana counter target spell, create X treasure tokens. I'm right.
You are.
Spelljack, this has a lot of text on it, and counter target spell, if it's countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into the graveyard. As long as it remains removed from the game, you may play it as though it were in your hand without paying its mana cost. If it has X in the mana cost, X equals 0. That's 3 in triple blue. That's interesting. Summary Dismissal, exile all other spells and counter all other abilities. Supplant Form, 6 mana, return target creature to its owner's hand. You put a token that's a copy of that creature onto the battlefield. And then Swan Song. You done? You done laughing at me?
Oof, I'm exhausted just hearing it. Do all that. That's tiring.
Are you punishing Max?
I mostly didn't want to read it, so I gave it to him because I didn't want to do it.
I was waiting for him to just go, and then I was going to take over for him. But no, he just kept rattling him off. And I'm like,
I powered through.
Max is a champ.
I need another beer.
All right. So we have a few counter spells in there. We have some combat tricks, things like that. What are your thoughts on this instant list? I think if you, the one that jumps out to me, Confirmed Suspicions, which we talked about, there's a couple of these counter spells, whether it's Dismiss, which is 4 mana, or Confirmed Suspicions at 5. I would be very tempted if I wasn't going with the Tezzeret package to turn a couple of those into 1 or 2 mana counter spells, things like Delay, or like he mentioned Arcane Denial before. Although he didn't like it. But there's a few things like that I would maybe consider.
I definitely think delay would be awesome in this deck. If you manage to go delay into Teferi, they never get the card back.
Right.
And oh, snap.
And it's only two mana. It's really easy to keep mana up for it. It gets tricky keeping mana up for things that confirm suspicions.
Yep.
But it also would play nicely into that Tezzeret package you talked about. And it, you know, does get you those tokens. So it's not a bad card. I feel like that would clean your CMC up a little bit too. And it's just tough having too many of those expensive counter spells.
I think it's lacking card draw. Between the sorceries and instants, I think it needs a little bit more.
I would agree.
Now, as for what cards they should be, that's a little bit tougher question.
I have a suggestion for
what
that.
What would that be?
I think Paradoxical Outcome would be great in this deck. So Paradoxical Outcome is an instant from Kaladesh for 3 and a blue. Return any number of target non-land, non-token permanents to you control to their owner's hands. Draw a card for each one you revealed this way. So typically this is played in like a Cheerios deck.
Yep.
You bounce all your stuff, replay it. It's a storm card, essentially. You have enough low mana creatures, are those low mana rocks, where you can bounce them and float your mana, bounce them, replay them, and you draw a bunch of cards. I think it's an interesting card, and it doesn't see a lot of play. It's worth a shot.
You can bounce your commander to reload him.
Right.
You can rebounce that.
Worst case, you spend 4, bounce your commander, and draw a card.
Right. Yeah, that's makes sense.
Especially if you have nothing in exile.
Bounce that Snapcaster and then thing back and recast him too. Yep. Like there's a few options there.
It keeps your engine going with the stuff you already have in the deck.
I would be very tempted to put High Tide in this deck. You're not doing anything. It's going to enable occasionally that huge turn. It's very rarely a dead card. Like sometimes you gain 2 mana or 3 mana out of it and it's not that huge of a deal. But like there's going to be times when it just gets you 11 mana and lets you do something disgusting in a turn. It's almost never a dead spell. And if you can put it under your command, it's also something you can grab put under your commander as well. So I like High Tide a lot in Mono Blue. I'd be very tempted to find a slot for that, and it's a cheap card as well. I have a little collection of cards here, and I'm going to mention them. Displace, Essence Flux, Ghastly Flicker, and Siren's Ruse. I'll do different variations on flickering creatures in and out. So this is a deck where he has Nexus of Fate already in it. And he mentioned how his friend's going to annoy because it's kind of a slow win. If he's at the point in the game where he can go cast his commander and go get Nexus of Fate, he could also conceivably then throw one of those bounce spells on there and cast Nexus of Fate off his commander, take that extra turn, and during that extra turn then cast one of those bounce spells to bounce his commander back to his hand.
And go get Nexus of Fate.
And go get Nexus of Fate again and one of the other bounce spells again. And then do it again. So it's there's a way to do an infinite loop, but it requires a lot more moving pieces. But if you just want to be able to do it 2 or 3 times, it's pretty easy with those spells to go get Nexus and redo it 2 or 3 or 4 times at least, which will hopefully allow some of your other creatures to punch through and do lethal damage when you take that many turns in a row.
Yeah, you could do that. I was just thinking of another way of doing it that I've seen more popular is capture Jing Zhao with a Archaeomancer and Riptide Leb.
And we were already talking about doing Archaeomancer anyway.
Yeah.
Because you can just go infinite with it. You may only have like 3 mana left each turn, but if you go infinite turns, you just build up enough and you can just win that way.
So yeah, and I think like you already said, people don't love losing to Nexus of Fate, but like I think they prefer to lose to 4 Nexus of Fates in a row and you're just going to close a game out than losing to a Nexus of Fate and then having you say, okay, I hope I can redo Nexus of Fate in 3 turns.
Yep.
Or I can, you know, get my commander back out after bounce game. I think just having more options to chain multiple Nexus of Fates to lock the game, to just close a game out and win is better than it being sporadic.
I do find it very suspicious. You have all these wonderful counter spells in here, but no Pact of Negation.
Well, it was expensive at one point. It's not anymore. It's like $15.
Has it dropped that much?
Yeah. I thought the same thing, Chris.
Yeah, he's got a Force of Will in here. Yeah, no Pact. That's true. It would be a good. And you know what? I'm not going to say run Mana Drain because it's still $80.
It's on his maybe board, so I'm assuming he has one or he's looking for one.
Okay. Because that would definitely be something I would replace things like Confirm Suspicions with. Although I think Delay is a really good card too, but that helps you with that big turn, and it's a cheaper counter spell as well.
Yep.
One of the cards I had on my list is actually in his maybe board that I didn't see when prepping my notes, was Reins of Power from Commander 16. 4 mana instant, untap all creatures you control, and all creatures target opponent controls, and then you essentially flip-flop, and they gain haste until end of turn. So, okay, I'm going to untap my Kaho, and I'm going to take all of your tokens, Selesnya player. They gain haste, and I'm going to swing at you for 7,000 damage.
And it also gives you the option to, again, if you are playing with some of these balanced creatures, balance your Archaeomancer and bring it back to your hand by recasting it and then do it again next turn and hit somebody else. I think is what your win condition is going to wind up being in this deck, is a few of these spells like Reins of Power or like Nexus. And I think you want to build in multiple ways to be able to chain it and redo those spells multiple times by abusing things like bouncing Archaeomancer or having the ways to flicker your commander or flicker or even flicker Archaeomancer. I think the flicker spells work well because you can also use them on other creatures and things.
Yep.
So I think you just want a lot of different pieces that simultaneously work with each other. So whatever configuration you have in your hand, it's going to give you a chance to do multiple things, whether it's the Pickles Lock or whether it's 4 Nexus of Fates in a row or whether it's training the captures or time warps if you put those in the deck or I think that's your best bet, because the first thing I looked for here in this deck was when he mentioned wanting a win condition, and man, in mono blue it gets tough, and in this deck it was especially tough to find a really obvious thing you can do
without really cutting the whole theme of what he's playing already.
Right. Someone's playing a token deck, you're like, well, man, you don't have a Beastmaster Ascension in here. Put that in
there.
You don't have an Eldrazi Monument. That's going to be a win condition. You don't have Cathar's Crusade in your Celestia token deck. Put that in there. Path of Discovery. Like, there are some decks where it's easy to throw a few win cons in. Hey, you're playing a Beater Commander. Put in a Hatred, and you can one-shot somebody. It's not nearly as easy here, so I think you need to have a bunch of different cards that can kind of be your pick-your-own win con by combining them in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back through my notes, and I missed something.
What'd you miss?
I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning.
Okay.
We didn't talk about putting a Talaria West in here.
I had put... Oh, I suppose because it lets you at least go get Manamo, worst case, or Boseiju if you
or
need
Riptide
those.
Or Riptide Lab.
Riptide Lab, true. I can't believe I was... I don't know what I was thinking, saying I'm not sure why it's in the
deck. I went through my notes. I'm like, oh, hey, there's that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, In like we said, there's room in this deck since you're not running any of the doublers. You can definitely throw Riptide Lab in here and a Scavenger Grounds for sure. Can't believe I forgot to mention that like I do 3 times a week. This has been the, I think I told Jerry, I'm like, this has been a puzzle for me to try to figure out. I don't, how to make it work and how to, without also being annoying, because these kind of decks can be annoying. You could run 25 counter spells and no one wants to see that. But it's been interesting to look at. Like, I had never even really, I'd seen this card but hadn't paid attention to it before. I liked trying to figure it out and I want to see this deck get played. So Jerry, next time you are in our shop, bring Kaho and let us see the deck. And let's see what changes you may have made.
For sure.
Any final thoughts from you guys on Kaho Manamo Historian?
Like you said, this deck was a puzzle.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat down and looked at it like, okay, time to dig deep.
I did the look at it, and I'm like, okay. And I like read through the deck, and I'm like, okay, I need to let this kind of like sit in my brain for a little
simmer
bit.
And
I walked away, and I came back a couple hours later, and I'm like, I still don't. I still don't have it.
Good.
And I did some reading, and that's where I found that stupid, 95 island combo on Reddit somebody posted, 4 years ago or something. So that's where I found that. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. And he could do that just to, mess with his friends. But it was rough finding a lot here. So I think your best bet, like I said, is to mix and match a bunch of different pieces that are good on their own. And if you have the right combination in hand, you can chain something together that's so much value, you'll probably win. Well, thank you very much, Jerry, for being a supporter and sending us your deck. We appreciate it. This was a cool one to look at.
It was definitely interesting. I'm not a blue mage by any means, so it was tough for me to really figure out what to do.
Same here.
All right. Guys, thank you for looking at the deck as well. We'll be back next week with another show. Till then, I am Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.